The following videos or interviews are part of the United States Marine Corps Vietnam Tankers History Project and were recorded at the Vietnam Tankers Association reunion in Washington, D.C. on October the 30th, 2015.
Okay, my name is Bruce Walston. I served in Vietnam with 1st Tank Battalion and Bravo Company and the 1st Platoon, which was stationed on Hill 37 some of the times.
Okay, and any specific operations or incidents you want to tell us about?
One of the first operations was Mammal Trust, and we got into some pretty serious stuff saving the infantry.
What year was that in month?
Yeah, it was May 19th, 1968.
So it was just a little bit after the Tet Offensive.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, the infantry, which I think was 1-3 or 1-7, the 7th Marines anyway, and they got pinned down, and we went up. And we couldn't get to them because there was a river there. And they were all laying there getting sniped and mortared and machine guns. And we couldn't do anything to help them. So I jumped off the tank and run down there and picked one up, the one that I seen the most serious wounded, and carried him back, put him on the back of the tank. And went down there and made a total of like 9 trips and put them all on a tank, and we managed to back out of there and get them, called in a helicopter, got them back to Da Nang. And
these were NVA or VC?
These were pinned down by NVA. I can't remember which regiment it was, but.
Now, there was a difference between NVA and VC, weren't there, Bruce?
Yes, there was.
Tell us a little bit about the difference.
Well, as far as I knew, the VC were running around in black pajamas, and the NVA had regular uniforms on.
So the NVA were regular line troops.
Yeah.
Pretty strong army?
Yeah, they had their strong points.
They had their shit together.
Yeah, I never saw a tank when I was there, but I don't know if any other tankers ever saw any tanks either, but I know they had them.
They had them.
Yeah.
So tell us, like, okay, you spent how many months in Vietnam?
Well, I got there in February of 68, and got on a couple of different operations, Operation Lynn River, Operation Sussex Bay. And got a combat promotion to sergeant. I was actually leading the platoon for about 3 months as a corporal. And
and were you on a gun tank, a flame tank, an Autos?
I was on a gun tank, Bravo 1-2. And we had some pretty good tankers there. But then they started rotating, and I extended for another 3 months, and
so you spent about 16 months in country?
Yep, 16.
Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, 16 months, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, we did a lot of search and destroy missions. There seemed like I don't know if it was the 7th Marines, if it was 1-3, but I know we went with a lot of just, you know, security backup for the grunts, you know.
So mostly with the 1st Battalion of the 7th Marines? And
I think so.
1st Battalion of the 3rd Marines?
No, it was the 7th.
All the 7th?
I think so.
Okay. Any particular funny things you may have encountered? Because, you know, during the time, sometimes those things happen.
Yeah, there's times there was things that weren't very funny, but there was times when we had our good times.
Some lighthearted times.
Yeah, we ended up buying a little TV, and we were able to get Gunsmoke, and that was kind of fun. And we went to the Army and stole some beer from them.
No, we never steal, we only borrow, we only return. And we return their
beer. Yeah, we returned them empty. But
Good memories, some good memories, some bad.
Yep.
Let's talk about the good ones. Got any good ones you want to talk about?
Oh, good.
The brotherhoods formed, the men made
brothers for life. Went from corporal to sergeant pretty fast, and on that kind of that promotion, and then all of a sudden you're from nobody to all of a sudden you can go in your own sergeant's hut.
Yeah.
That was pretty special.
Sure it was. But you know, you were never nobody. I mean, one thing I've noticed is having been a Marine tanker is, yeah, we had tank commanders were lance corporals.
Oh yeah.
We had tank commanders and platoon sergeants that were corporals. You just, you pin those stripes on one more stripe at a time, and I guess what happens is you make a little more money and take a hell of a lot more responsibility.
Yeah, heavy on the responsibility. And ended up getting a battlefield commission, and then that was a real jump.
Oh yeah.
From enlisted to officer.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I got back from Vietnam, they sent me down to Camp Lejeune and stuck me in engineers. Well, I'm not an engineer. Well, not now. I mean, or not then. I was a tanker and a good one. And what do you do with a tanker in engineers? So they stuck me in as a training sergeant. Well, I didn't like that. At the gym, and I met my first sergeant I had in Vietnam. And he recognized me and asked me how it was going. And I said, well, they got me stuck in a training position behind a desk down in engineer company. He says, well, we'll fix that. So he went over and got Master Gunner Sergeant, I think it was Master Gunner Sergeant Shea. He was acting first sergeant as for the tank battalion. So they ended up getting me into the tanks, and at that time my commission came through. And I actually have a magazine with me that's got a picture of Shea and the first sergeant I had in Vietnam, putting the stripes on, or putting the bars on, taking the stripes off. So I went from sergeant to staff sergeant to second lieutenant in a matter of minutes.
Time in the Corps did you have at the time?
In about 3.5 years.
Pretty quick.
Yeah. And then I went from, I spent 2 years as an officer. I made second or first lieutenant. And then what do they do with a hardcore officer that's, you can't stick him in it where it tanks. You know, somebody's already been there. So they stuck me in a training office in a S3 section. Well, I didn't like that, so they ended up sending me to a few schools, embarkation school. They sent me back to tank school like I needed that. And then I had an opportunity to go to infantry training and become XO of Zulu Company. And that was some good times.
So back to Vietnam, where were your tactical area of operation when you were with the company?
Mostly around Hill 55 and Hill 37. We'd go over to Anwa once in a while, over to Hill 10. It was mostly right around that area.
You were in Operation Mamluk Thrust, you said?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that operation?
Well, it was supposed to be, we were sent into Thong Duc to rescue a bunch of Green Berets. Well, we never made it up there, but we did get them out. On that one, in 2008, because of the modern or the versatility of the computer, Lieutenant Hurt, which was my acting platoon leader, my platoon leader at the time of that Mamluk Trust, called me up and he says, I'm putting you in for the Medal of Honor. And I says, well, all right. So he wanted a full report for me, and he called almost all the guys in the whole platoon. And he got a big package together and he submitted it to the Congress. I guess it went up through the Congress, Secretary of the Navy, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, and they sent me a letter saying, or sent Mort a letter that it's been denied. So he resubmitted it, got a hold of, via the computer, he got a hold of all of those infantry guys that I had saved, even the lieutenant. Well, when I did save that lieutenant, the last one out of the guys that were laying on the ground, all wounded by a mortar, when I got him carried back, he'd seen what I'd done carrying all his men back, and turned and he says, "Tanker, you're going to get the Medal of Honor for this." But I never told anybody. So my mother told me, brought me aside, opened up a little box, blue box, showed me a purple heart from her first husband. She says, "I don't want any more medals," before I left. So I turned down, I was wounded a couple times and didn't tell anybody about that. Had shrapnel on foot once. That swelled up and started getting gangrene. I had to go to the doctor for that, and I told him I stepped on a tent peg. But
a lot of guys did that.
A lot of guys did, yeah.
A lot of guys did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And medals don't make the man. The man makes the man.
That's right.
So you did your time in first tanks, or third tanks, was it?
First tanks, yeah.
You did your time in first tanks, and you're on number of operations.
Yeah.
What do you think, how did you feel when you came home?
That was kind of crabby. I didn't enjoy that at all. You know, nobody recognized you or got in a cab and went back, and, you know, the 3 miles, what it was from the airport to my home, you think you'd have just said, "There you go, Marine." But no, he waited for his mother, or for his money.
Yeah. Where'd you come back to? Did you go through Travis, or?
Yeah, we stopped in Okinawa, scared the heck of us on a C-130 there. Then they got us on a big plane. We flew to California and then up to Duluth, Minnesota.
What your memories, you know, back in you know, we all lost a lot of good brothers.
Yep.
But you know, what are your memories along those lines? I mean, you know, they aren't with us today, and they're certainly never forgotten. But as long as we remember them, they somehow live on to a certain extent, I think.
Yeah.
Anything you want to tell us about some of the brothers that didn't get to come home?
Well, I've on one operation, I think it was Sussex Bay. we took a direct hit from an RPG and it went through the driver's head, went put 4 inches under the main gun, went through the gun shield, went through the 7 inches of steel behind the gun shield, wounded my gunner, my loader, sprayed my legs. Doggone thing went through the radio, went out of the back of the tank. Now that's a powerful weapon.
Right through the tank.
Right through it, just like, yeah, it did.
A lot of people
spraying the whole inside.
People have no idea.
That's for sure. And then I got on an intercom and told the driver to stop. Well, he didn't have a helmet on no more. I jumped down. Well, actually, the tank, the rest of his body fell on the pedal, on the accelerator, and the tank took off. I jumped on her and stopped it, and by that time it was already in the trench with the enemy. So I had a little hand-to-hand there with some enemy, got back, and one guy was shooting at me, so he was in a hole about 15 feet away, and I was got up on a tank and hid behind the gun and fired back at him with my 45, and I managed to get back up there and told the loader, I got on a sky mounted 50 and I started blasting away. And then I got the driver to go in there into the driver's seat. I pulled the driver out of it and laid him on the fender. But I had to, my loader jump in there and back us out of there and fire. I fired and fired. Probably fired a half a dozen rounds with the main gun loading and then getting up and firing. And they took off, all of them. By that time, the infantry got up there. And we called in a medevac and got my loader out of there.
Did you ever hook up again?
Nope, never saw him again. He'd just taken all my money from Vikings losing the Super Bowl to Kansas City. But I never saw him again, never heard from him. I looked him up and he's moved or something.
But, and that's what's good about these reunions is sometimes we get to hook back up. You know, we get to spend the time with the guys that we would have loved to have spent with. But
After that, that's right after that, then I got a combat promotion as a sergeant. And then they put me in for the Navy Cross for that operation. And ended up getting a Silver Star.
Of course.
But, you know, that's the way it is. In the Marine Corps, in the Army, it would have been different.
Well, just like a friend of mine was awarded the Navy Cross because he was the only one that was living out of the three. The other two guys got the Congressional. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
But again, from the other side of it is, there's guys that just refuse it, and they're successful at that. Sometimes they just make them take it. Unawarded recipients, so to speak, that is certainly deserving of everything we can give them. So you spent 16 months in what was, at the time, the most deadliest place on earth.
Yeah, it was pretty.
You came out of it alive, and that's what's important.
It got pretty intense. You had a huge concentration of camps right around between Hill 55 and Hill 37, no man's land kind of a place.
You know, one of the things that really bothered me when I came home and got out of the Marine Corps and returned to college were the stories of the atrocities that we were allegedly committing. And my response was, well, is that what you saw when you were there? Of course, these people were never there.
Right.
You know, it's something that has hung over and still does hang over our heads by, because some people still believe it. What was your experience?
Actually, I really didn't see anything that was wrong. I didn't see any people getting tortured or scaring them with tracks or running them over with a tank or something. I wouldn't have allowed it.
No. In the 16 months in Vietnam, you saw a lot of stuff.
Saw a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every morning, one of the tanks have to go on a patrol with engineers. They mine sweep the roads. We go through this one village. There was a little boy there, and you know, one of his legs was missing. And he'd always come out and wave, and I would toss him some sea rations.
And sea rations were what we ate.
And the sea rations were what we ate.
Yeah.
That was something I didn't care for. But he liked them.
Yeah, well, as long as they didn't have apricots in them, we were doing good.
Right.
You know, that was something that was really, I mean, and that was something when I went back and one professor was running his mouth off about all that, but what we never heard, and I'm sure you saw, I mean, do you know how that little boy lost his leg?
Nope. I never speak any Vietnamese to learn it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know that we got blamed for a lot of stuff the NVA did in the VC.
Yeah.
And I know that we had 2,000 civilians in Way City that in some cases were buried alive, and media never reported that, did they?
No.
And that was NVA and VC that did that. And I remember also to have corpsmen go into Vils and maybe give a kid an inoculation, and the next day that kid would be missing an arm, an arm that was inoculated, and be damn near dead. You know, and we also hear about, you know, the the crazed mentality of the Vietnam veteran. I think we've kind of finally got people understanding that we're really not crazy.
I would hope not.
I mean, we, you know,
it bothered me about that Lieutenant Calley too, you know.
Well,
being, he just lost control of his men. You don't lose control of your men.
Well, and Marines, quite frankly, you know, not down beating our brethren, but you know, Marines are a little more disciplined.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we tend to drive our leadership down to the lowest level, really. When, I mean, as a corporal, you're commanding an M48A3 gun tank, more firepower than a platoon of infantry. Hell, more firepower than a company of infantry.
Yeah.
About, well, how old were you, about 18, 19?
Yeah, just 19, 20.
20 years old.
20 years old.
A lot of power to be in control of at 20 years old and well-disciplined. And you just, you know, and you had control. And so that's good because, you know, if you didn't serve, you don't know.
Yeah, that's...
you don't know.
Darn.
68, you got there, and just after Tet. How were things in the country at that time, compared to what you understood Tet to be like?
Well, Tet was still pretty much going on in February.
I thought you said you got there in May. Okay, my mistake.
That was when we went on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Operation Mammoth Trust.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your Tet experience.
Well, I think one of the first things that happened coming into country, that when the plane touched down, they had a rocket attack on the airport in Da Nang. So there's everybody screaming at you, get off that plane, get off. And I think we even barely got our feet on the ground, that plane was taking off again. Well, there you are, standing in the dark. Nobody around. I mean, people running this way and that, and you got nothing, no weapon.
I mean, not even a sign, welcome to Vietnam?
No, nothing. It was dark, pitch dark.
And then what?
Well, I just started listening. Heard somebody talking, and we go over by them.
So you land, you run off the plane, you get greeted by a rocket attack.
What did I get myself into?
And then you reported in, and they sent you to the first tank.
Yeah, sent me up to the first tanks.
So you left the airport.
I got put on guard duty right away, and they mortared us. I took a mortar. I was wearing Marine Corps glasses at that time. And I took the mortar right through the lens, and it went above the eye and damaged the muscles. And you kept fighting. It was a tough one, blood running on your face and glass in your eye and shrapnel. And after it was over, we went and one of the corpsmen's washed it out, and they sent me down to Da Nang, to the hospital in Da Nang. So he just looked at it. He says, well, it'll be all right. And he puts a patch on it, and he says, okay, you can go back to your company, your platoon now. So now I'm in Da Nang, now I got to get back to Vietnam, or back to Hill 37. Well, I'm out there hitchhiking, no gun, nothing. And here comes a six by. So he says, you need a lift? I says, yeah, I got to get back to Hill 37, my outfit. And he says, okay, jump in the back. Well, I jumped in the back and walked forward before I get to the front of the tank to hold on. He took off like a madman. I went out the back, flipped upside down when I hit the tailgate and landed on my head. At least he saw it and stopped, so I was able to get back in.
Yeah, motor T.
Yeah. I was pretty upset with him.
Oh, yeah. So you're in Vietnam less than a week?
Yeah.
And you already been wounded.
Already been wounded. Yeah.
Already been to the hospital. Now you get on a six by truck, and what he does is he flips you off the back and damn near kills you.
Yeah.
But at least he stops. You get back on the truck, and you finally get back to Hill 55.
Yeah.
Which is probably where you wanted to be to start with, because it was a hell of a lot safer there than riding a damn truck or whatever.
That's for sure. Yeah, it was a. This is something else.
You're out in the Ville running around without a goddamn weapon. Charlie's all over the place.
You didn't get pinned down by the there was somebody in the, they said, Arvin said there was some NVA in this hut. And they're just all pinned down for, and I'm laying there with them. I said, what is, they're all shooting at this hut. I says, well, why didn't you go up there? It's just a grass hut. You must have killed anything inside there. So I grabbed one of the NVA's, give me your gun, I'll go up there and check it out. You know, one eye, and I went up there and walked in the hut there. There was a dead pig in there.
So
they were pinned down. Everybody got met. I can't believe they were all pinned down by a pig.
But you guys had pork to eat that night, right?
Yeah, we took it too.
Absolutely.
But absolutely. We had to go back for it when I got back to the Hill.
Absolutely. So your first position on the tank was when you went and got to your
gunner. Acting as a gunner then.
See the world through a periscope.
Yeah. That wasn't too safe.
Well, there was no, you know, that's what's so crazy is, you know, when you talk to people, and I think you'll agree, you know, people think tank, wow, safe. You know, but when we take a look at the casualty rates, my understanding, and I mean, I certainly can't be wrong, but my understanding as far as percentage-wise was the second highest casualty rate in country.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the grunts might have lost more guys, but they had more guys to lose. You know, the helicopter door gunners had fewer.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, we're talking about taking an RPG hit that comes in one side of the tank and goes out the rear end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a powerful weapon, and people, they have no concept of that, and let's hope they never do. There's nothing worse than being up close and personal, something like that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then there was landmines. You know.
I think it was Delta 1-7.
First time submarines?
Delta tank, 1-7. That they presented us a plaque, 1st Platoon. For outstanding service, had a big RPG on it and two captured AK-47s. I got a picture of that too.
They're grateful.
They were really grateful.
Well, you know, the grunts knew. I mean, you know, when people talk about battle and they talk about war, I mean, you know, I think, let me know if you disagree, but, you know, people might glorify it and think that you're fighting for your nation and for your country, but in reality, you're fighting for each other.
Yeah, as a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get awfully close with these guys, and, you know, pretty soon we say, well, you know, you got a bunch of grunts pinned down, and you know some of those grunts sometimes, and most times, other times, you haven't got a clue. But you still went in there.
Yeah,
still. You still went in there, because they were Marines, and we take care of our own. You went in there and it's sort of like, you know, you look at the tank and what you're describing in that the one particular battle hauling the brothers out of that firefight that were wounded. I mean, you're an ambulance. You're an ambulance trying to save their lives. And you know, people don't understand it. First of all, they don't realize that we actually had tanks in Vietnam and they thought that they were useless.
They could pretty much go anywhere.
They certainly were a very integral part of all tactical operations. Your unit, as well as every unit, when you comprise a sit back, I guess we participated as tanks in every major battle in Vietnam. Plus, naturally, security, perimeter security, and roadside. You're sort of talking about your road sweeps and every morning. Everybody goes out and does a road sweep, right?
Yeah.
And they're usually thought to be pretty simple. But did you ever come across a simple one?
No. We always hit a mine somewhere along the line. They miss one.
And with an M48 rolling down the road, they know you're coming.
Yes, they do.
Not quite. But it kind of draws a lot of attention, doesn't it?
Yeah. They had a stick in the road one time. And a picture of myself and my tank me up on top, because I was usually out of it from the waist up. And he had some horrendous piastre reward for the death and capture of this tank. Well, I wanted to save that, but the S2 section took it from me. That would have been nice.
Had a bounty out on you.
Yeah.
Not uncommon.
No.
Not uncommon. You try to make it pretty personal, and it was personal. It should have been.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Did you ever, get stuck outside the wire at night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had, I think it was Operation Sussex Bay. We had to go see if we could retrieve a couple of Amtraks that the NVA had RPG'd them, and they were stuck in the river. We got real close to the river, and then that, we set up, the grunt set up a perimeter around us, and we all settled down with the tanks, and it started raining that night. In the morning, every tank was mired down. Every tank was stuck right to the fenders. And being from northern Minnesota, I took out my axe, cut down a bunch of bamboo, made a bamboo blanket, got my tank up on top of it, and then got on top of the bamboo that I cut down and was able to get the high ground from there. And then we hooked up all kinds of cables. It took a while, but it hooked us up, and we got them all out, everyone. And my tank had, I had six dead infantry on the back, and we spent, I think, 2 days there, and the infantry left us, and they left us with one squad of men to help protect us. Well, it was still raining and everything. I wouldn't want to be out fighting if I was the NVA anyway, but we managed to get all those tanks out of there and got them back. And at one time, the battalion, the division commander, the General Simpson, I think it was, ordered us to blow them in place. And I asked him, well, give me a day, and I'll see if I can't get them out. So we got them all out. I'm talking about saving the government some money there. Oh, geez.
For sure. You know, you mentioned an Amtrak. People have no idea what an Amtrak is.
Yeah, it's another coffin.
Yeah.
It's just
gasoline operated.
Like a shoebox with wheels on it and tracks.
Not heavy armored, is it?
Because it's not heavy armored
vehicle.
Yeah.
You ever ride in one?
Yep, I have.
Most of the time, you rode on one.
Yeah, I rode on it. Actually, I didn't see very many Amtraks.
Yeah. Well, they were coffins. They
yeah.
were coffins, but they were the light metal coffins. I think tanks were the heavy metal coffins.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Have any interaction with people other than that young boy who was missing a leg?
Well, I had always been told that if a Vietnamese offers you food or something, you're supposed to just eat it, you know. So I was down at this one man's hut, and he was having some rice and fish. He offered me a bowl, and because I took it, but. Oh, that's not very good, but I don't think I want it. And I'm sorry if I offend you, but I'm not going to eat this. This tasted like rotten fish. So I couldn't handle that. Even the rice it had bones in it. It was bad.
But did you ever wonder if when they offered you something, if maybe it was a problem with it because it may have been DC?
Maybe. Yeah, never know.
You never know. Never know. How about the Arvin? You had to work with them. How was that?
I think they were mostly scared. They were, they looked on us like we were gods. You know, most Marines are pretty big and strong, and they're pretty frail, like kids.
Yeah, well, tankers especially, because know, it takes a lot of muscle to work on track.
Yeah.
And if you hit a, you hit a mine and lose a road wheel and track, then of course, not to mention that you're not going anywhere, and every enemy artillery piece in the area is going to zero in on you.
Yeah.
Did it ever happen for it to you?
Oh yeah, we hit some mines. We after the, say the road wheel housing, or probably the spindle housing that was bolted to the bottom of the tank, they'd blow them right off. We'd take a armor piercing 50 caliber, take the center out, put a vice grips on it, and then work those little bolts out counterclockwise with that. They're 1-inch bolts. They were pretty easy to work them out and get new bolts and put it back together.
It's not for the weak. It's not easy being a tanker, I understand that.
Yeah, it's not easy to put on a sprocket.
Nope. Nope. And you know, thank God for C4 sometimes.
Yeah.
It does wonderful, wonderful things for end connectors and torsion bars.
Yeah.
Did you you mentioned the, you know, you guys in the first tanks were able to sky mount your 50s.
Right.
Which was good.
Which is good, I thought. I didn't like that little cupola anyway.
Well, how many times did you have any experience with the cupola mounted 50?
Oh, I fired that almost every
experience.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that cupola mounted 50, I wouldn't have got out of that situation.
But I mean, not, but I mean actually mounted in the cupola. Not sky mounted. The 50 was great.
The 50 was great, but it was pretty useless.
Because we, you know, my experience was you get off about 4 or 5 rounds and the things will jam.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, and that's why you guys sky mounted your 50s. You were allowed to, and that was a smart thing. Everybody should have been able to do that.
Yeah, and if we had a lieutenant that made us wear flak jackets once. That made it kind of hard to get back down in the tank.
Absolutely. And you know, you just described an incident with an RPG, and I'm just wondering here now, your lieutenant says wear a flak jacket, and I'm wondering what good he expected that to do.
Yeah.
Inside the tank. Yeah, because it certainly wouldn't have done much good in my world. I mean, I don't think it would have helped very much. It might have helped you a little bit, but all that stuff gets flying around in that tank, it's gonna find you.
It's gonna find you, yeah.
It's gonna find you. Any other things come to mind?
We had something that happened on Operation Lynn River, where the grass was up, way up over the fenders.
Elephant grass.
Yeah. You could look behind, you could see your two tracks, and you couldn't see the infantry on either side of you. So I'm going along, and I said, this isn't right. So I told my gunner, or my loader, you know, I had a bunch of M16s. I had a Savage 12-gauge pump with buckshot. So I think I gave him that plus an M16. You face backwards in case somebody pops out of that grass with an RPG and you take him out. And while we're going forward, I hear this unmistakable thump of a grenade on the bottom of the turret. Thump. It went. I looked down and I saw it was rolling around. No pin on it, no handle. Ah! So I jumped down there and grabbed the flak jacket that was behind the radio rack. Threw that on top, it was rolled right over by the HE rounds. So I kind of threw that, ran on top of it, and I jumped on top of it and I yelled at my gunner, get out of here. And he was a colored guy. And his eyes were so big, it was just incredible. He couldn't move, he was frozen. And we sat, and I kind of said, oh boy, this is gonna be crappy. And nothing happened. It was
a dud.
It was a dud.
Oh.
So I looked at him, couldn't figure out where it came from. I just couldn't, I didn't know.
Well, you, at that point in time, in my mind's eye, you were at the point of the spear, so to speak.
Right.
Leading the grunt. So there was nothing but bad stuff in front of you and probably bad stuff aside.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it was I didn't know if I should get out of the tank or go get it.
That's...
Yeah, that's a tough call.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I didn't turn.
Well, you know, good, yeah, the good news is it was a dud.
Yeah.
A few experiences like that, so thank God their quality control wasn't up to standard. Yeah.
I
heard a few of those stories. When you got, we've heard so many times that the most dangerous days in Vietnam were the first 30 and the last 30.
Yeah, you got in the last 30, you got kind of where you didn't give a heck.
Yeah, but you know what happens is sometimes, you know, you don't care and you figure you got it all out mastered and controlled, and the guys let their guards down.
Yeah.
But you got your last month in Vietnam, and you know you're getting out, you're leaving. And you know you're leaving brothers behind, and I know how that must have felt. But what did it feel for you to be coming to the end of the line and know you were going home?
It was, I would have extended again if it wasn't for my mother. Because I was in pretty good shape there at the end.
Well, you know, the hard part, I think, and I so often hear it, is you're going home and you're leaving brothers behind, and that's tough.
It is, yeah.
That's tough. And you've faced all these dangers and have, but for the sake of grace of God, for the sake of a hell of a lot of good luck, made it out alive. Grenades coming into your tank and not exploding.
Yeah.
RPGs going through your tank from one end to the other. I mean, one thing after another, and heck, if the bullets and the RPGs and the mines don't kill you, then the food will.
Yeah, the food will.
Or the snakes might.
Yeah.
All the other things, and you're getting to go home. But you know, I have never spoke with a Marine, and I don't know what all the other guys, because I haven't spoke with any other guys other than Marines and Navy corpsmen about leaving. But every time it was like, you're leaving brothers behind, and it was difficult, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was difficult. Like I said, I didn't really want to go back and leave these guys. But I felt when I did leave, I left them in good hands.
Yeah, and that's important.
And that's why I couldn't leave the first time. I had to extend it.
Because you didn't feel comfortable.
Right.
And so much for mom and apple pie and everything for each other. Outstanding, Bruce. The brotherhoods we form.
Yeah.
You know, guys don't know each other, never saw each other before, and may actually have never even served together in the same unit.
Yeah, I didn't know any grunts really. They kind of had their own section.
Yeah.
They stayed away from the tanks. They thought we were all crazy anyway.
Well, we're RPG guys.
Yeah.
Quote a guy who, in Way City, by the name of, I believe it was a Captain Christmas, who later on became Lieutenant Christmas, referred to our tanks as Lieutenant General Christmas, as RPG magnets, and they were. They drew all the fire.
Yeah.
It was the heaviest firepower weapon on the battlefield. So of course. And so you got a lot of attention, didn't you?
11 hits.
11 RPG hits.
11 RPG hits.
Oh.
We took one in the belly.
In the belly.
We went up over a rice paddy.
Oh, okay.
And it was up like that, and I was up on the Sky Mounted 50, and they hit. I seen the smoke from the RPG when he fired it. So I opened up right away. I didn't even know he got hit. It hit the batteries. All it did was blow up the batteries and spray my driver's butt with acid. And bam.
Were you still operational, right?
It was fine, yeah. It wouldn't start after we brought it up.
Yeah, new batteries.
Yeah, we needed new batteries.
Yeah, such a misconception. People believe, okay, what did tanks do in Vietnam? Were they really necessary? And my saying, I think you'll agree, is absolutely necessary.
They sure saved a lot of infantry.
Yeah, What did they do? My answer to that would be a hell of a lot. You know, must have been safe. My answer to that is you don't know what you're talking about. They weren't safe. No one was safe on a battlefield, no matter who you were.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as a safe area. There was no such thing as a rear area. You know, you could be sitting on Hill 55 and everybody thinks that might be the rear area. No, the rear area started at the ocean.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And so, you know, people don't understand that. And, you know, they just, a lot of people just don't get it. A lot of people think that we lost that war. And my answer to that is, if General Yap was alive, and you know he is, commanded the North Vietnamese Army,
right,
the French at Dan Bien Phu, he disagrees. He, I don't know if you've seen it, but you know, before he died, he acknowledged that they were about ready to sue for peace. But the people, their friends in the United States, the protesters, people like Jane Fonda, her former husband, Tom,
Turner?
Not Ted Turner, but he was the California State Assemblyman and California State Senator. Tom, he was one of the Chicago Seven, later on identified during the Chicago riots and the Democratic Convention of 68, which we weren't paying a lot of attention to, had other things on our plate.
Yes, sir,
but that they gave them the will to move on and to continue. But after the Tet Offensive of 68, they never tried again, did they?
No.
And he was smart. He was smart not to do that. And he knew it. He was a brilliant general whose plan failed. And I guess by 1970, Marines were pretty much out of Vietnam and the Army took over. And he never came again until we finally walked out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to look at it, and I don't think we lost that war. I think that we performed well, to say the least. You know what really is interesting? When we take a look at the statistics, comparing to those who served and those who did not serve in the United States military during Vietnam, we see contrasts that are just almost unbelievable. We have been more successful than our counterparts. We tend to bring more and contribute more to society than our counterparts. We tend to stand out. And so, you know, Bruce, we have a lot to be proud of.
Yes, we do.
We have a lot to be proud of. And those days that we spent in a far-off foreign land, when we say we, I say Marines, because I don't differentiate from anybody. Marines are Marines. Doesn't matter if you serve with a tank unit, you serve with an infantry unit, or if you're an MP. Well, MPs weren't too cool, but they kept on making us follow rules. But, you know, we served America. And we served America, we didn't serve a political party or anything. And so we have a lot to be proud of, and you have a lot to be proud of.
I was very proud of what my actions, what I did over there.
Most definite, and proud of each other.
Right, and I was proud of my men. They're all good people.
And the story from like you, my brother, needs to be told. I'll never forget the day that my son came home and told me, "Dad, we started studying the Vietnam War. You know, Dad, that is the first war we ever lost." And that's about the time Dad says, "No." "No, we didn't, son. And if the history book says so, it lies. And if the history book says anything other than the fact that we held our ground, we accomplished our mission, and that when we were in Vietnam, we set up a defense that was near impenetrable. And they tied it right at one time, and the only way they got it by us, they snuck by us. Under the auspice of a peaceful ceasefire to celebrate an important time in their year. But they never did it again.
Yeah.
Politicians did what they did, but when the military comes to mind, No, we accomplished our mission, and then we were told to go home.
I think the tankers did a good job on their mission. Saved a lot of lives.
Absolutely, and people don't, no idea. Tanks in Vietnam, that never happened. They visualize Vietnam as this huge jungle and swamp or whatever.
Well, it was a huge jungle and swamp.
Yeah, but in areas where tanks couldn't operate.
Right.
That's simply not true. So I thank you. And this is your first time reunion.
Yep.
And you know what? I hope we see each other next time.
I don't know if I want to come to Washington.
We're not going to come to Washington.
The first thing they did was took my car, and they gave me a room with no refrigerator for my beer.
All they got to do then is just put you out in your little hut and you're home.
Yeah, I know how to make rice and fish.
Absolutely. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
When they sent me back to tank school as an officer, we were talking, and I think it was in the NCO club. And my first sergeant walked in. He says, "Sergeant Walson, I see you're an officer now." I says, "Yeah, I made it." He says, "Well, congratulations. You know what? Your unit is down on the beach right now having a big party. Bravo Company, 1st Platoon. In fact, Bravo Company, the whole 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Platoon, and 4th. And I didn't go down there. I kind of kicked myself. I won't think I'd know anybody from there. But I didn't go down there.
The first tanks came back in 70.
Yeah.
Around March?
It was right around in that area.
March, and I met first tanks on the beach.
Okay.
Del Mar.
Yeah, was that Del Mar?
Yeah, and then we rolled up. We rolled them back to Las Flores, and got to the EM club and started saying hello.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it well. It was great, so good to see some of the guys that I hadn't seen for quite some time. And then they left, and I guess they went on leave and what have you.
They must have all went on leave.
So you should have been at that party.
I should have went down to the party. I could have gotten my pistol back.
Well, I guarantee you, if it was on those tanks, it was long gone.
Oh, I ended up getting it back.
Oh, did you?
I had to leave it. My father sent me a pistol, and I think it came from a doc, Bartholomew. I think he was Al Capone's doctor. But he got this 45 1917 model revolver. And my dad did, he sent it to me in pieces, in a cookie tins, you know. And I put it together, I carried it through the whole Vietnam War. My first sergeant saw it, and he kind of eyeballed me. That's not regulation. And then I says, "Well, it's made in U.S.
That's kind of like
Colt.
The guy's carrying an M1 carbine modified. That's not regulation. Hell, that wasn't even issued. I got it off an Arvin.
That's right. I had a Thompson M1 or Thompson machine gun. It had a BR Browning automatic rifle that had the Savage pump.
Okay. We're going to, unless you got anything else, we'll wrap it up.
Oh, we can wrap it up.